Welcome back to the Sideline Live podcast. You can follow us over on Twitter and Instagram at the Sideline Live. We'd love to hear from you. On episode 109, I'm delighted to be joined by NBA skills trainer Drew Hanlon. I had the pleasure of meeting Drew during his visit to Ireland earlier in the year, and on this episode we discuss his journey to becoming a trainer, working with NBA stars, measuring success, and so much more. I hope you enjoy. Okay, Drew, thanks a million for joining me on the podcast. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm excited we finally did this. Thanks for your patience.
A lot to get through. We don't have a lot of time. So I just want to start off kind of growing up for you. You've spoken a lot of before about your discipline. You gave up sweets at 12. You started shooting shots, 1,000 shots a day before school. Where did that discipline come in, and even maturity at that age to start putting in the foundation work for what your career would become?
Yeah, I mean, I think it all started with just my desires to wanting to be a professional basketball player or play in college basketball. You know, when I was younger, like every other basketball player, I dreamt of playing in the NBA. You know, I wanted to be, you know, an NBA player. I also wanted to play in the NCAA tournament because I grew up, you know, watching the NCAA tournament and the excitement around those. So really, that's what it was. I was a short white guy that had average athletic ability. And I knew that the only way I was going to close the gap between, you know, who I was and who I wanted to become was through hard work. And so, you know, I made a lot of sacrifices. One of those things was giving up sweets when, you know, I was 12 years old and didn't eat sweets until I was done playing college basketball at 22. Another one was, you know, going to the gym at 4:59 a.m. You know, I'd wake up 4:59 a.m., get to the gym by 5:15, shoot 1,000 shots every single morning, go to practice after school, and then go back for a skills workout at night. I mean, I was just relentless with my work because I knew that was the only thing I could control, you know, and then I wanted to become a better athlete. You know, believe it or not, you know, I could do 360 dunks as a 5'11 guy. You know, for those of you guys that are watching that don't believe me, you can go on YouTube and find it. But, and it was all because I worked. You know, I ended up having a 41-inch vertical by the time I graduated college. But none of that was given to me. The one thing that I did have given to me was I had parents that supported my dream. They drove me to the gym when I was too young to drive. They rebounded for me when I needed a rebounder. You know, they just found ways to make sure that I had the opportunities that I needed to give myself the best chance. But other than that, it was just all hard work and grit and making sure that I stuck to what I said I was going to do, which was, be the most disciplined and most hardworking player there was.
Okay. You've spoken a lot before about starting off. Brad Beal would have been one of your kind of early clients, but Jason Tatum as well, both in the same area. I had a great question from Eve Nealon. She wanted to know what made those guys different to others you had from that area and were training at the same time but didn't make it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that I can tell you. I mean, it starts out with just talent. You know what I mean? Everybody has a different talent level. You know, like Jason Tatum, 6'10". You know what I mean? That's a blessing right there that most people don't have the, you know, ability to have on their side. But for Brad Beal, really, what it started with mentality. You know, when I met Brad, it was actually, I was player of the year in Missouri, the state that, you know, we were both raised in. And Brad was just a freshman. And so if you think about it, I was way better than Brad Beal when I met him, which is crazy to think about now, you know, being the player he is. And so Brad actually started working out with me. It wasn't that I was working him out. It was Brad was working out with me. And we'd do group workouts together because he wanted to do what I was doing at the time. He wanted to go play college basketball. He wanted to be player of the year. He wanted to win a state championship. He wanted all those things. And I think his freshman year, he averaged like 8 points a game. And that summer, he worked out with me that whole summer. And, you know, I went off to college and Brad became a sophomore. And Brad, his second game of his sophomore year, he scored, I think, 51 or 52 points. And everyone was like, timeout. What did you do this summer? And he had grown a few inches. He had gained some weight because he was lifting weights with his, you know, brothers. But really, the biggest change in his life was he started working out with me. And so he gave me probably more credit than I even deserved at the time. But he was like, man, he's like, he transformed my game. And so, you know, that year he ended up averaging, I think, 24 points a game, up from 8 points a game. He won a state championship, which was pretty cool because I won in 2008. He won in 2009. So we won back-to-back state championships. And the rest was history. He went from like unranked to ranked, I think, eighth in the country the first time he was on a ranking. And, you know, just made a big jump. But a lot of it was just, you know, you could see how quickly he was learning things, how quickly he was adding things to his game. You could see his level of toughness, his mentality, was there. He was already really good when I got him, with raw skills. His mom had, taught him how to shoot at an early age. So, I think that you can't really pinpoint one thing. With Jason, same thing. I remember the first time I worked out Jason, I worked him to the point where he was like throwing up, almost passing out. And, afterwards I got a text from his mom because his aunt had brought him to the game, to the practice. And his mom texted me and said, "You'll love this." Jason just texted me and said, "Mama, they were going to have to carry me off the court before I gave up." And it's like, at 13 years old, 14 years old, however old you are as a freshman, to have that mentality, like most people don't have that. Most people, when they hit a wall, they hit a wall instead of finding a way to get through the wall, around the wall, and it's just like, that's what those guys had. And so, I'd be lying to you if I said that there weren't players that I worked out that had that same kind of grit and toughness that didn't make it. But, usually the didn't make it are still really good. I had Malcolm Hill, was fun. I was with Zach LaVine in Chicago the other day, and there's a player named Malcolm Hill that now plays on the Chicago Bulls. And I worked him out in high school as well. He was also from the St. Louis area. And I worked him out throughout high school, same way I did Brad and Jason. We were individual workouts. Malcolm was also a player of the year in St. Louis, just like Brad and Jason were. And then Malcolm went to Illinois. Well, then Malcolm found himself overseas playing basketball, and now he's finally found his way back to the NBA. But there's so many countless stories of players that, got college scholarships or, now are playing overseas, or, like Malcolm now found their way back in the NBA that aren't as known because they aren't the bigger names like Jason and Brad. But the truth is, that's how my career started, was I helped a lot of players get college scholarships, and a couple of those players, Brad and Jason and those guys, went on to become really special, which is why the kind of notoriety came with, the success that the other people were having.
That's funny you mentioned Malcolm. I've actually subscribed to his newsletter. I've had it for about a long time, and Michael did take over my page, so I know Malcolm's story well. But when you think about it, Drew, when you talk about the talent that the guys have, even for example with Malcolm, how much of luck goes into making it to even co the college level, to the NBA, the pro level? When you have the talent, when everyone has the physicality, when the mentality is there for most players, how much is down to actually pure luck at the end of the day?
I don't believe in luck at all, to be honest with you. I mean, I know there's chance. Like sometimes you can just be seen at a certain event and blow up, or you can have the certain person walk in your life that can really help you improve your life. But I believe that, like, the people that make it, they would have made it regardless. Like, I tell people that all the time. Like, people are like, "Well, would Brad Beal have been an NBA player if he ever met you?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And they're like, "For real?" And I'm like, "Do I think I helped Brad a lot? Yes. Does Brad think it helped him a lot? Yes. But Brad would have figured it out on his own, because he just has that it factor. You know what I mean? And I believe that the greats all have that it factor. They have a way to kind of figure out how to get done whatever needs to get done. And so, do I think that, there's times where, what most people call luck happens? Yeah, if there's chance. But I really believe it's all about just kind of, full force going all in. And because, you know what? Like, I don't think the reason I'm not in the NBA was because of luck. I think the reason I wasn't in the NBA was because I wasn't good enough. Like, I always wonder, like, how good could I have been if I had me as my own trainer? Like, me now, what I know now, as my trainer back then. And I'm like, I think I'd have had a better chance. But again, that's not luck. That's just, it would have been more skill, So I don't really believe in luck. I believe that, like, you just got to find your way. And people that have that perseverance and the kind of the will to figure out whatever they need to do to get whatever they want to happen done, those are the people that end up winning and succeeding. And the people that have excuses or say, luck wasn't on my side, those are the people that, end up being unlucky, And it's funny because I said this the other day, and somebody was like, "Come on, Drew." But I was like, even the lottery isn't luck. You either pick the right numbers or you pick the wrong numbers. They're like, "Yeah, but it was unlucky that our numbers didn't get picked." It's like, no, you picked the wrong numbers. Now, you don't have great odds to pick the right numbers, but the truth is that's why you didn't win. You picked the wrong numbers. So, yeah, I'm not a big believer in luck. I believe that of course, there's opportunities that are provided. Different people have different opportunities. There's different chances that happen. There's times where you might step on a line and it counts as a two instead of a three, or the ball bounces a certain way. But, I truly believe that those who, put in the work and those who persevere through all the stuff that life throws at them, those are the people that end up winning in the long run.
Okay, interesting. What have you found to be the most effective teaching tool or method during your years training with the guys?
Simplify is the number one thing. Make everything that you do really, really simple. You know, breaking it down to the finest nuances, what I call the micro skills, the skills within the skills. That's the first thing, because I think complexity, you know, is kind of the enemy of execution. I really do. You know, you think about it. Most people, like, let's say they're losing weight. You know, most people are like, man, I got to lose 30 pounds. And it's like, there's a big gap. You know, why not just say, hey, how do I lose 1 pound? And then let's lose another one. And then let's lose another one. Well, that's the same way that you build up a skill. Instead of saying, man, I got to master a great, you know, low post move, it's, hey, let's get really good with the dribble. Then let's get good with the feet. Then let's get good with the shot. Then let's get good with the read. Then let's actually do it against a live defender until you can make that proper read. Now we've got a skill that we can rely on when it matters most in the game. So I would say the number one thing is, you know, I always call it simplicity, making the complex stuff really simple. And then I think the second thing is just being able to get in their heads and their hearts. And I think that that's where a lot of people go wrong. Like, you know, it's funny, Giannis had a quote that went viral the other day talking about like the NBA is not all about skill. He's like, there's a lot of really skilled players that aren't in the NBA. He's like, you know, some of it is just grit, some of it's toughness, some of it's mentality, et cetera. And some of that is so true. You know what I mean? But saying that, I think the thing that stood out to me in that quote was, you know, kind of the understanding of you got to be able to touch people, you know, people's hearts, and you got to be able to get in their heads. And so, because they have to have the confidence to do the things that they're capable of doing. And so, those two things, making the really complex really simple, that's my first teaching nugget. And then being able to understand that it's not all about being able to get them to do it 1-on-0, but it's also being able to get them to do it when it matters most, which requires a different level of confidence and a different level of, like, you know, making it mean more, you know, making it mean more so that they actually follow through with action instead of just talk about, you know, what they wish and desire.
I had a great question in from Patrick Lyons. He wanted to know what part of the job is most difficult or challenging for you, Drew, and how do you manage to overcome that particular element?
To be honest with you, the hardest part of my job is figuring out my travel schedule because I have so many guys that will hit me and I have to kind of prioritize what matters most, who matters most at that certain time. So, you know, I literally just missed a call from Zach LaVine while we were doing this call, but he's probably calling, hey, listen, when can you come to Chicago next? I'm in Philadelphia right now. I go to New York in 2 days from now to work with RJ Barrett and Isaiah Hartenstein. Then after that, I go to Boston to work with Jason. I'll be there for opening night, him versus Joel. After that, I'm going to Indiana to work out Tyrese Halliburton. That's all in the next 2 weeks. And then the whole cycle starts over again. So my hardest part is just figuring out, you know, who I need to spend my time with, how to properly divvy up that time, and then also being able to be there for every single person because it doesn't matter, you know, who I'm working with at that time. I have to be available to everybody. And so, you know, making every client feel like they're my only client is my goal, and I try my best to do that.
How do you stay fresh for yourself then when you've mentioned the next 2 weeks of travel, like burnout, you know, what do you do for fun away from, I know obviously you love basketball, but do you ever take a break from it? Have you ever suffered from burnout?
I've never suffered from burnout just because I feel like it's a blessing to be able to have a lot on your plate. You know, like I always laugh because you know, I'm always like, man, people complain all the time about having too much on their plate, but the goal is to eat. Like, you know, the goal is to eat. Like, I would way rather have, you know, the problems that I have than some of the problems that other people have. And my problem is, you know, I have to decide which NBA game to go to. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, man, like when I was a little kid, you know, for my birthday present, my birthday's in September, I had it last week. You know, I would get a ticket to an NBA game, and my Christmas present was the flight to the NBA game. And I'm like, now I literally get paid to go to NBA games. I'm like, you know, like what? Come on, man. Like those aren't real world problems. So, you know, I've never experienced burnout. You know, it's just because I really feel like, you know, I have a chance to do something that's special. You know, I work with the best player from the Knicks, the best player from the Wizards, the best player from the Celtics, the best player from the Sixers, the best player from the Pacers. The summer I worked with the best player from the Nets, you know, one of the best players from the Heat. Like, it's like, man, I have a chance to shape the whole Eastern Conference. Like, that's something that my 10-year-old self wouldn't even believe was possible. And so I look at it as a blessing, not a burden. And, you know, I just make sure that I do everything that I can to make sure that I keep my energy up, you know, whether that's eating as best I can, working out as best I can, or just making sure I keep all the nonsense away. Like I don't say yes to things that I don't want to say yes to, so that I free myself up for times that for the things that I deem important.
Part of the journey is most fun, Drew? Is it starting out grinding, going through? I know everything was kind of geared towards maybe getting a car. Now it's, the next step to now you're being flown around to watch NBA games. What is the most fun part of the whole journey so far?
I love seeing a smile on somebody's face. Like that's the win to me. So like when I see one of my clients, you know, like when I FaceTime them and say, congrats on being an all-star, or Tyler Hero and RJ Barrett just both got $100 million deals this summer. When they call me and they're just waiting and I'm like, what's up? And they're like, man, we did it. You know, and I'm like, no, you did it. Like, that's what it's all about. You know, and then other things, like there's times where, you know, I'll be at a game. Like tonight I'm going to the Sixers game and I'll be on the court before the game watching the warm-ups and stuff like that. And there'll be numerous kids that come up to take pictures with me and say they're with my training program. And if they happen to come up at the right time, you know, and one of my NBA players sit next to me, I'll make sure that they get an autograph or a picture. And seeing that kid's face light up, like that's a win to me. So really, I just love, you know, when people get to experience things that they didn't think po were possible. I love seeing people win. I love seeing people happy. So I don't know. In a weird way, like I've never really had a selfish take on this. It's always just been like, you know, how can I help as many people out as I can? And through that process, you know, life's been great to me.
How do you find then, in terms of when people from the outside, let's say for myself, what is the biggest misconception you find with NBA players or professional athletes? Is there anything that you kind of hear about that you're just like, that is so not true about these guys? Or it obviously depends on each individual, but overall, is there anything you've heard that's like, that's way off here?
One, they're just normal people. You know what I mean? Like that's the one thing I think the biggest misconception is like they're normal people. What I mean by that is like some of the guys play video games just like everybody else. You know, some of the guys will go to Cheesecake Factory just like everybody else. You know, they love ordering Shake Shack from Postmates like just like everybody else. They like hanging out with their buddies just like everybody else. Like I think that's a big, they have problems just like everybody else. And sometimes their problems are even more magnified because they're in the public spotlight. So I think the biggest misconception is they're just people. They just happen to be really, really good at their craft and in the public spotlight because they're really good at their craft. But I mean, they're just normal people. And, you know, and it's fun going through life, you know, being able to be friends with these guys. But I don't look at them as superstars, you know, or celebrities. I look at them as just, you know, brothers and friends. So, that's the biggest misconception is that they're different. You know, they're yeah, of course they make more money, they have access to different things that normal people don't maybe have access to or everyday people don't have access to, but the truth is they're just like all of us. You know, they go to sleep like all of us, they eat like all of us, they put their shoes on like all of us, and you know, that's the biggest thing I think people don't realize.
Okay, what's been the biggest lesson you've learned from basketball, Drew, starting off playing up to now?
Biggest lesson I've learned from basketball. I mean, I've learned so many. You know, I really do believe that life is the greatest teacher. You know what I mean? Basketball is a great teacher as well. I don't know if I could pinpoint one, to be honest with you. I'll give you a couple. You know, the first thing is a story. You know, I had a client one time. We get out of a $500,000 customized car. We go up into a multi-million-dollar penthouse, and as we're walking in, my client said, man, life isn't fair. I was like, hold up, life isn't fair? Like, what do you mean life isn't fair? We just got out of like a $500,000 car and a $25 million, you know, penthouse. Like, yeah, you're right. Life isn't fair. Like, I'm not living like this. And he's like, no, you don't understand. I trade all of this for like inner peace. Like, if I could just go to sleep at night without the stress, the anxiety, the worries, all the drama that's in my life, all the fake people that are in my life, I would trade it all for that. And I think that's the biggest lesson I learned was like, here I was younger, so you know, I'm over there being like, man, I just got to get more fame, more followers, more money, more. And I realized like that's not what life's about. You know, life's about finding inner peace. Like life is about living a life that brings you happiness. And so That's the best life, advice that I can give somebody. And it's also the best thing that I've learned from basketball is that, more isn't always necessarily better. It's you it's the quality of life that you live is based on, your inner being, not your external being.
I know you spent a bit of time with Kobe. Being around him, was there anything specific you learned from him, whether it's basketball specific or life? I know he had a great kind of outlook on life. Was there anything that kind of stood out to you with your with spending time with him?
I think the biggest thing with Kobe was just how obsessive he was. Like even little things, like we go and get ready to work out, and he knew everything about me before I ever met him, just because he wanted to know everything about me. You know what I mean? He wanted to have that upper edge on everything. He was just such a competitor. So I think the biggest thing that I learned from Kobe was just be obsessive, and it's he wasn't very well-rounded. You know what I mean? Obviously he had, the ability, he had so much talent in the business world, he had talent in the film creating world. Like he was a genius. But it was what he did was he poured his heart and soul into the few things that he did and became really, really good at everything that he did. And I think that's the biggest thing that I took away is like be obsessive. Like don't dabble here and there. Like if you're gonna do something, do it. If you're gonna go all in. And I think that's the biggest thing I took away from him.
As in terms of training and coaching the guys, where do you learn from at the moment? How do you sharpen your skills? Who do you look to, and what where do you like to learn from?
I mean, the good thing is I'm best friends with some of the best players in the world. You know what I mean? I have half the Eastern Conference All-Stars were in my gym this summer. So I learned from them, stealing from them. I learned from coaches. I'm really fortunate to be friends with majority of the head coaches in the NBA. So I steal from them. I steal from film. I'm watching games, observing, reverse engineering what's working, what's not working. I learn from everybody. I mean, there's times where I'll have a conversation with a sixth grade coach, and the sixth grade coach will say, "Hey, this really works for my little kids." And I'm like, "Man, that's a cool phrase or a cool way of doing things." And think about how can I apply that to what I'm doing at the higher level. So, yeah, I mean, I'm again, obsessive is even probably an understatement for what I am when it comes to helping my guys get results. But that's what it is. That's what it's all about. It's just about constantly being a lifelong learner and not feeling like you're above anyone and not feeling like anyone's below you. Like it's just making sure that every time you're in a conversation, you're constantly giving what you can give and taking what you can take. And that's why I'm still on a long journey, because I look back and I think like 10 years ago, I was like, man, 10 years ago, I thought I was the best trainer in the world. And now 10 years later, I'm so much better than I was back then. And so I'm like, man, now I'm like, oh man, I'm still the best trainer in the world. But I'm like, wait, there might be a whole nother level of I haven't unlocked 10 years from now. So I'm on a never-ending kind of pursuit of trying to be the best version of myself I can be, so that I can help as many players, coaches, trainers, people as I can.
If I could go back in time and through history even and go through kind of the list of the top 75 NBA players to ever have played, who would you like to go back in time and either work out or watch work out?
Oh, I mean, it's a no-brainer. Michael Jordan. I mean, I'm literally wearing Michael Jordan's golf course, hat right now. Like, I've been fortunate to spend time with him. It's just he was my idol growing up. He was my everything. Like, when I used to get grounded, like let's say I, was snuck candy from the pantry or came home late from what I would get grounded where I literally could not watch Michael Jordan. That was my punishment, because that's what meant the most to me. Like you could take away anything from me, I didn't care. You take away me watching Michael Jordan, I cared. And that was before these things were around. I couldn't watch it on my phone. There were times where I snuck my dad's Walkman radio, which some people don't even know what Walkmans are because they're so old school, but they're like these big blocky radios. And I'd sneak my dad's radio when I got grounded from watching Michael Jordan games so I could listen to the Michael Jordan game. I put the Walkman under my pillow, put my ear, act like I was sleeping, and just turn it off if they came in. But I was obsessed with Michael Jordan, so it would definitely be Michael Jordan, just because I feel like he was the greatest player of all time. His mentality was different. Skill set was just so next level. He did things that we're now teaching players how to do, decades later, and he was just doing them naturally and organically. That's just how good he was and how special he was.
And we are going to move on to the Sideline 7, brought to you by RTP Physiotherapy, founded by chartered physiotherapists Tony Fox and Thomas Dibbity. The guys are based in St. Jude's GAA Club in Temple Oak in Dublin. RTP specialise in physiotherapy, return to play, physical health, performance. You can visit rtp.physio for more. Question one, Drew, what is your favourite quote?
Favorite quote's a quote from my grandma. So My grandma, when I first started having some business success, she was like making sure that I didn't let it go to my head, but more importantly, she wanted me to kind of keep perspective. So my grandma said, Drew, listen, just know that you're never going to have everything that you want, but you're always going to have more than you need. And if you keep that perspective, you're always going to be grateful for all the things that you have in your life, and you're going to be focused on your blessings, not your burdens. And I think that's the biggest thing that I've always tried to maintain was you're never going to have your dream house, your dream car, your dream bank account, your dream, I mean, literally the list goes on, but you're always gonna have more than you need. For all, most of us, we take things for granted that other people pray for. Like I got a roof over my head, I've got food, I've got, a computer, I've got a phone, I've got friends, I've got opportunity. Those are blessings. And so, I always keep that quote in perspective.
Okay. Question two, what's the best sporting event you've been to? And you pick one basketball and then one non-basketball. I don't know if you watch many non-basketball things.
Yeah, I've been to everything. I've been to Game 7 of World Series. I've been to Super Bowls. I've been to Game 7 of NBA Finals. Everything. Trying to think. Ironically, I probably wouldn't pick games that people would think. Like I said, I've been to all these, finals, championships, these great events. But my favorite event, I'm going to give you one that's kind of a weird answer. My favorite event that I ever played in, which counts even more because I attended it, obviously, was I played at Duke my senior year in college. We lost at Cameron Indoor by 1 point on a last second buzzer beater kind of shot. Second half, we were down by, I think, like 15 points at one time. And then Ian Clark, who ended up winning a championship with the Warriors in the NBA, he was one of my teammates. Him and I think we made six or seven threes in the second half. I made four threes like back to back to back to back. ESPN game. Coach K, he had 900 career wins, was going for 902. So that was my favorite event that I've ever attended. And then another one that was really meaningful was 2011 World Series game in the MLB. The Cardinals were playing in game seven, and I was at practice in college. And I texted my dad. I was like, Dad, I'm sneaking home. Like, get your stuff on. Like, I'm going to figure out ways to get us tickets. Let's go. And it was just really cool to like experience, our hometown team, the St. Louis Cardinals, winning a world championship together. So those would be my two that stand out.
Okay, very good. What's been the biggest setback or challenge so far in your career, and how did you react to it?
Biggest setback or challenge? I think the biggest challenge, honestly, was when I was younger. I started so early that no one, the coaches, the NBA coaches didn't respect me early on. I was 19 when I started working out NBA players. And so I remember there'd be times where I'd show up to work out players and I'd get kicked out of the gym. Like, no, he's not allowed in. Like, why would you be listening to a college kid? That kind of stuff. And then after college, it was still the same thing. Like, ah, here's this little, cocky kid that thinks he knows everything. He's never even been on an NBA team or NBA roster or never played an NBA game. What does he know? So being able to prove to people that just because I never coached at the highest level or played at the highest level, I was able to help the players and coaches at the highest level. That was the biggest setback. And the way I overcame that was by just getting results, just proving over and over again, like, yo, I know what you're saying, but you can't judge anything besides the results. And so that's what I've always said. Like, I don't care if people love me or hate me, just judge me by my results. And I know that I'm doing everything that I can to get those results and make those results as sweet as possible. And so that's the biggest thing that I've had to overcome in my career.
A question I did mean to ask you earlier was, how do you measure success when working with a player? Is there kind of definitive things you go to? Is it just kind of when you guys talk and have a plan, or how do you measure it?
It would be like this. It would be asking them where do they want to get to and being able to get them to that destination or even to a better destination than they ever thought. But I look at it in two ways. I look at it as on-court success, off-court peace. Can they be the best basketball player that they can possibly become while also living the best life that they possibly could live? I used to only focus on the on-court stuff, and I realized I was wrong in that regard because you can be great on the court, but then if off the court starts going wrong, on the court starts going wrong. It's hard to have, be great in one and not be great in the other. So now I focus on court basically being the best player, off the court being the best person, and that's to me success.
Okay, brilliant. Question four, Drew. What's been your biggest achievement on or off the court so far?
This is hard. I mean, listen, with Tyler's contract now, I've helped guys get $3.7 billion in contracts, help guys, become all stars, champions, everything. I would tell you my biggest thing that I'm most proud of, honestly, in a weird way, is I've never changed who I am. I've never wavered. I think a lot of people, if they had this amount of success or notoriety, would have changed. But, and I still respond to everybody's DMs. I still, if I see a kid at a park and they're shooting the wrong way, I go up and change their shot. If somebody, can't afford a camp and they send me a heartfelt note and explain why they can't afford the camp, I figure out a way to get them in camp. Like, I think that's the biggest thing that I'm most proud of is just, how many people I've really been able to impact and how many people's lives. There's so many of my interns that are now coaches in the NBA. There's so many people that, have come through a camp or a clinic that now are trainers and they're like, you inspired me to do this. So I think that's the thing I'm most proud of is that I've never changed up and that, the amount of lives that I think I've been able to improve has been the most touching to me.
Looking back, Drew, what advice would you give your 18-year-old self?
Keep going. You're gonna fucking do it. Keep going. Like, I really do mean that. Like, when I was 18, I really believed that I was going to be the best trainer in the world. I believed that I was gonna work with the best players in the world. I believed I was gonna build a big time business. And I would have just told my 18-year-old self, like, yo, all this work is gonna be worth it. My sophomore year in college, I wrote a 1800 page curriculum. Most college, whatever that was, my, 18-year-old self or 19, 20-year-old self. Most 19 or 20-year-olds complain if they have to write a 5-page paper. I wrote an 1800-page curriculum. There's a lot of nights that I skip parties to work on that document. There were a lot of days where, I missed my own graduation to run a camp and clinic and to go meet with Nike. Like, most people don't make those sacrifices, but like those sacrifices, were worth it.
Who would be your dream dinner guest, Drew? And you can open up the table to a few people if you want.
I mean, even though I've already met him, it would still be Michael Jordan. Like, just because, I've been fortunate. I spent, a whole day with him and got to ask him all the questions that I'd always wanted to. But, sitting down with somebody that you grew up idolizing, that would be, person that I would do. If I had, let's say, a table of four, I would definitely, I think Barack Obama would be another one. Just because I think that, the leader of, the United States, a country that I grew up in, and also he shares a love for basketball and sports, so there'd be more common ground than some of the other presidents. And another one would be Tiger Woods. Again, I love golf, but he's the best golfer in my opinion ever, but also went through so many hardships. And so being able to be resilient enough to battle through that stuff, like, I think if you look at every great success story, they've had adversity that they went through and stuff. And I think you can learn so much from the troubling times. And so, all those people that I named had, it wasn't all, a cakewalk to where they got to. And so, I think if I had a dinner of me plus three, I think those are the three that I would roll with.
Out of interest, what was the question you were most excited to ask Michael Jordan?
About his mentality, like it factor, mentality, just because I really do think that that's what separated himself from everybody else. If the Bulls were down 15 entering the fourth quarter and you're watching the game with a room full of people and you say, hey, I know the Bulls are losing by 15, but I'll bet that Michael Jordan wins. No one's going to take that bet because everyone knew that he was going to figure out a way to win. And I think that that level of swagger, that level of confidence is abnormal. And so, just being able to pick his brain on that and other things was really cool.
Final question before I let you go. I don't want to interrupt Joel's or delay Joel Embiid's workout too long. So, if your life was a book, Drew, what chapter would this be called?
My life was a book. Here's a weird thing, because I feel like most people look on the basketball world and they're like, man, he's conquered so much. He's on top of the world. But I feel like I'm just getting started. Like, I said this the other day to somebody, but they're like, man, like, it's amazing. It was my birthday. And they wrote me a big, nice, long paragraph about how, man, it's been great watching your success. And I'm like, I feel like I'm in the first quarter of a preseason game right now. Like, I feel like we're on the intro. It's not even the first chapter of my life, And it's funny because I'm writing a book right now, and it's all about mentality. And it's when I'm writing this book, I keep going back to the first chapter and writing and writing and writing, rewriting and rewriting. And I'm just like building this whole book. But I think the I think the book would be called My Biggest Brand, Unseen Hours. You know what I mean? It's like literally on my shirt right now, Unseen Hours, but Unseen Hours. And the reason is because I think there's been so many sacrifices that I've made. There's been so many things that I've done when no one was watching, and all those things have paid off. And I know they're going to continue to pay off. And you know, it's little things like, you know, I've been on this, you know, binge where I'm eating really well because I know I'm traveling. It's like having bananas instead of having, you know, fruit snacks. Like no one's watching. I'm in my hotel by myself. I don't have to stick to this, but it's me versus me. And you know, if I say something, I do something. I keep the promises with myself. And so I would say Unseen Hours. That's what the chapter would be called, because it would be, I feel like I've done a really good job, you know, mastering the unseen hours, and it's given me a chance to do a lot of crazy things. But I also know that continuing to win those unseen hours is what's going to allow me to do all the special things that are still to come.
Okay, well, Drew, thanks a million for joining me on the podcast, and just want to wish you the very best of luck moving forward.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for your patience and getting me on.
A big thank you to Drew for joining me on the podcast today and for taking time out of his busy schedule. I'll be sure to leave all of his social media links in the description box below if you haven't already seen his content. If you enjoyed the episode and you got something from it, be sure to leave a rating and a review over on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, as it does help the show grow. As always, thank you for listening, and I'll catch you in the next one.